This is Holiday Readings and Remembrances, reflections on the season as told by members of the Northern Michigan University and surrounding communities. I'm Stan Wright, your host. Today we hear about a 1961 holidays Christmas storm in Iowa, as told by Iowa resident at the time and now a resident of Vulcan, Michigan, Kay Palmcook.
The Christmas blizzard of 1961. Although I don't recall any unusual weather predictions going into the week of December 17, 1961, excitement for Christmas had begun to build at my family's farm home near Randolph, Iowa. As a 10-year-old, my routine chores included such things as gathering eggs, feeding calves, and peeling potatoes. I was a fourth grader at St. Patrick's School in nearby Imogene, where my brother John and sisters Marie, Louise, and Julie were also students. We each practiced our lines for the school program, wrapped dollar grab bag gifts in foil, and kept up with our homework. Little sister Norma caught the daily bus to kindergarten at Farragut, while preschool brothers Philip and Carl kept Mom busy at home. Dad and Mom were partners on the Bob and Lucille Jardin Dairy. Mom kept financial and herd records, while Dad oversaw the day-to-day operations of the farm. Mom, who was better at logistics, economics, and academics than relaxing with a child on her knee, had won the title traffic manager within our home. Early in the week, she was coordinating plans with our oldest brother, Frank, to get him by train from St. Ambrose College on the eastern side of the state to the train depot in Omaha, where we would meet him. Brothers Ed and Joe were students at Marhill Academy in Atchison, Kansas. We would meet them at the Hamburg, Iowa depot. I wasn't with Mom for her grocery shopping this time, but had experienced it on another occasion. We had walked into the Safeway store in Shenandoah, got a cart, and headed down the first aisle. When the produce man, Stanley Nelson's eyes met Mom's, he did an abrupt 180-degree turn, saying, "I've got something for you. I'll be right back." He soon returned with a cart filled with mixed produce. He suggested a price while Mom looked through the bruised bananas, limp celery, soft onions, overripe apples, and the like. Sold, Mom would buy it, and I had my own cart to push. Mom skipped right past the fresh-baked breads to a shelf marked day-old bread. She knew how to feed a big family on a budget, and the coin saved with her frugal spending in one area would be used for things like education, investing, and charity in others. I don't remember what I gave or received at the school gift exchange, but I do recall a one-of-a-kind prize that my sister Marie won. Sister Anthony, our Dominican teacher from Cincinnawa, Wisconsin, had issued a challenge. She held up a brown paper bag concealing a birdcage made of multicolored pipeline cleaners and styrofoam. Inside was a silky, feathered bird. Whether a fourth, fifth, or sixth grader, anyone in the classroom could compete. Whoever came in closest in their guess to the contents of the bag would win the hidden treasure. Neither my curiosity or competitive nature helped me that day. I asked my sister how she ever guessed that the bag contained a bird. She said she'd seen a pair of cardinals before school, so it was on the tip of her tongue. I'd made it through the midweek all-school Christmas program, surviving the fear of standing before the other grades, parents, and community guests without any major speaking mishaps. I had worked on lip-syncing with the hope that I could time my expressions and actions to match the song and group recited words without being noticed. I was reasonably sure I'd succeeded. The few words I had to deliver on my own emerged without a stutter, for which I was grateful. By Thursday evening, my older brothers were all safely home from their schools, and we had a house full with 13 family members. Mom had wisely prepared with full cupboards, freezer, and refrigerator. With our radio tuned in to KMA, Shenandoah, Iowa, at 960 on the dial, I'm sure my folks heard word of the approaching storm. On Friday, December 22nd, I heard the 5 a.m. routine of Mom rattling pans, preparing oatmeal, bacon, and eggs for the first breakfast shift. Soon, Dad and the oldest kids would be in the barn for the morning milking. The snow started in about 7 a.m. It was a beautiful snow. Without twist or turn, it fell straight to the ground. My sisters and I looked out the windows and were eager to get outside to gather eggs and feed calves, but more importantly, to play in the snow. "No," Mom insisted. "We were too young to be out in the storm. The snow would stick around, and there would be plenty of time for play." She recalled how her parents and grandparents told of storms on the prairie, where kids would get lost in the snow and not be found until the spring thaw. It wasn't until recent years, while listening to the children's blizzard being read by Dick Estelle of Radio Reader, that I realized Mom's family members were likely relaying the stories of the 1888 storm. Although too young to be out in the weather, we could spend the morning babysitting the younger kids, slicing bananas into the strawberry jello, or crunching crackers to put in the noon meal, a salmon loaf. When finished with that, we could fold and put away diapers, towels, and sheets. Sheets were fun to fold. With kids holding on all around the outside hem, we'd lift the sheet to the ceiling, capturing air and bringing it back to the ground, like a modern-day colorful playground parachute. One minute, the sheet was a cloud, the next, a tent or a snow-covered field. This went on until Mom walked through the living room, caught us, and set us back on task of neatly bringing one end to the other until the sheet formed a stackable, foot-sized square. Neighbor Roy Davis called about 8:30 a.m., one of our Holstein heifers had gotten out, and he had her corralled. With the morning milking done and the livestock rack on the 1958 Red Ford 3/4-ton pickup truck, Dad drove the mile to the Davis place to get the wandering critter. "Talk about whiteout," Dad said when he returned. "The ditches are full, and you just can't tell where the road is." Anyway, Dad had almost made it to the Davis farm when he ran off the road by the Morning Star one-room schoolhouse. Mr. Davis got his tractor and came down to pull out the truck. They loaded up the Holstein, and Dad was soon back home. After a short warm-up break, Dad and my oldest brothers went to the East Place to do chores. They were back to the farmhouse by 10:45 when the northwest wind started howling at nearly 40 miles per hour. About 11, neighbor Ambrose Doyle called. He couldn't get his car started, so he asked if Dad could come over and give him a push. Dad drove the pickup the half mile to help the neighbor. Snow was drifting in front of his car. "I could have gotten in around him," Dad said, "but if I did, we'd both be stuck, and I'd have had to walk home." So instead, he used the jumper cables. The neighbor followed Dad as far as our place, with a plan to head over to his other farm a mile to the south for chores. With the winds now whipping snow around like topping in a mixing bowl, the neighbor opted to turn around and head for the safety of his home. He called on the party line to let us know that he'd made it back. He was likely the last motorist to make it through that stretch of road for the next 12 hours. Our family of 13 gathered around the old quarter-sawn oak table for our noon dinner. We bowed our heads in thanksgiving for the food we were about to receive and asked for protection for all the farmers tending livestock, as well as the travelers on the treacherous roads. With a 7-hour workday in already, the adults usually took time after lunch to read, rest, and relax for an hour. Today was different. They listened for road reports, called to check in on elderly neighbors, and talked about strategies for getting chores done safely and efficiently. I heard Mom tell of the old-timers running a rope from the homes to their barns. This would serve as a safety guide in the blinding snow. Dad said with the buildings and fences as landmarks, they wouldn't need a rope this day. About 2:30, they made their way along the fence, past the garage and corn cribs, to the barn to milk cows and feed calves. It kept snowing and blowing from the northwest. Snowdrifts had even buried the chicken house. Back at the house, as we sliced and diced onions, celery, and taters in preparation for the evening meal of oyster stew, Mom reminisced about the Armistice Day storm of 1940. She was teaching in Nebraska at the time. Roads were blocked every which way, she said. Radio stations reported on the whereabouts of stranded travelers. In between Christmas carols and weather reports, KMA radio would soon also be reporting of stranded motorists. About 4 p.m., we heard knocking at the front door. A bit shy, I stepped back behind the rocking chair while my little sister Louise opened the door. In walked 7 snow-covered travelers and a dog. Louise went to get Mom, who was attending to baby Carl in the back room. An elderly couple en route to Maryville, Missouri for her brother's funeral had gotten stuck in a snowdrift a half mile east of us about 2 o'clock. They had tried and tried to get out, but the car wouldn't budge. Then, a little while later, a young couple with kids and a dog plowed in beside them. Fortunately, a young man driving home from work over an hour later was able to get stopped before running into the stranded motorist or the snowdrift. They all got in his car and made their way to our home. Ever the traffic manager, Mom started thinking of logistics and directing us kids and how we could help out. First things first, take coats and gloves and dry them by the heater vents. Seat the guests in the living room. Serve hot chocolate. Plan ways to stretch supper to feed 21 people. And plan sleeping arrangements. My 4 sisters and I ranged in age from 6 to 11. Mom directed us to gather our 5 pillows and to line them up along the side of 1 mattress instead of at the head of 2 beds. That way, she could free up one of our rooms for a guest family. She made plans to have my brothers move mattresses from their room to the living room for 1 family and another to the basement for a 3rd family. The boys could then put blankets directly on box springs for their beds. Meanwhile, at the barn, the milking was progressing. Unlike the Thanksgiving Day storm of 1952, they still had electricity to run the milkers. Dad was unaware of our new house guest until the young couple went into the barn. They were looking for scoops and helpers to dig them out so they could get going. Realizing the danger down the road, Dad said, "You're not going any place in this storm." Back at the house, several of us looked out towards the barn. The overhead power lines were getting whipped around by the wind like kids twirling a jump ropes on the playground. Mom worried out loud. "I sure hope the electricity doesn't go out. It would be an awful mess to milk all those cows by hand on a night like this." With a spark of wit, she added, "Well, if we do lose power, Bob will have a lot of help milking." With an expression of anticipated worry, one guest asked, "Does that happen often?" How fortunate the electricity and running water held. It was already an eventful enough evening. Okay. Mom and us kids made supper to be served in shifts. Stranded guests circled the table first for our traditional Friday oyster stew. I helped clear the table and then joined the younger half of the family at the table. By the time we'd finished eating, Dad and the older kids were in from the barn and the 3rd shift got their meals. Up until now, I'd treasured the excitement of the day with little concern of the seriousness of the events and how they were affecting our guests and the adults in our family. That changed when the phone rang about 8 p.m. There was a report of a stranded motorist with a heart condition. Neighbors up and down the highway would recheck sections of the road to no avail. With the wind rearranging the snow as quickly as snowplows moved through, the rigs had been called in and parked. With the report of the lost motorist, the county maintainer was sent out from Imogene. By the time he got back to town, it said that the guy with the heart condition and 21 other hardy folks were all hanging on to the framework of the yellow snowplow. The weather calmed by morning. At our makeshift bed and breakfast, we served hot oatmeal, bacon, and eggs. After milking was done, Dad went over to recheck on the stranded cars. "The snow was just packed solid under the hood of one car, and the battery was run down," Dad said. They towed them over to Bill Anderson's station at Randolph to get them thawed out. The county maintainer came, and Dad told him the location of the cars within the drift. The road was cleared. With the exchange of kind words and appreciation, our guests were soon on their way down the highway. According to the National Weather Service, at least 15 fatalities and dozens of injuries were attributed to the storm across Iowa. The weather event that had brought transportation to a standstill stranded thousands of travelers. One farmhouse near Bondurant sheltered 90 people, and another near Griswold housed 57. The Des Moines Police Department estimated that there were 10,000 abandoned vehicles in the city. Ankeny reported a 24-hour snowfall accumulation of 12 inches. The month finished as the snowiest December on record at many locations, although not in statewide averages. I don't remember what gift I unwrapped from under the homegrown tree that Christmas morning, but I do know the gifts I treasure in my heart. Realizing the power of life's storms, I treasure the gifts of shelter, food, faith, and friendships. I learned, too, that the gift of snow to sculpt, tunnel, and climb has no competition in boxed gifts from retail stores, especially when the snow mountains rise above the chicken house and you have siblings with whom to share the joy.
Holiday Readings and Remembrances is a Public Radio 90 production produced at the WNMU-FM studios in the Learning Resources Center on the campus of Northern Michigan University. I'm your producer and host, Stan Wright. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.